About 26 minutes past the hour on a Broken Road Radio Transcendent Tuesday, Don Clark, the most notable biochemist between here and where, Don? Here in Louisiana, I would guess. And Don comes to us every Tuesday morning, and he shares his scientific expertise with us. We're going to draw on some of that today. Don, also a resident of Garden Valley, Texas, and a vintner as well, so brings lots of talent here. David, you're here too. I didn't want to give you too big a buildup, so
yeah. I'm sorry. What? Oh, you're just announcing.
Yeah.
David is here. We're all here. Mm-hmm. It's amazing.
Donald Punt is a ruminator of fame, but not fortune, and he is a raconteur, right wing rants, and a grand poobah of political pontification. Just so you know,
I hope that will change someday.
Yeah, occasionally, he pops in with a question here too. So, David, I'm just want to encourage you to take part in the discussion today because
I was just down by the lake and I saw a ship coming in.
Did you?
So
you do live on a lake, yeah.
It's just a matter of time.
It was a catamaran. I don't think there's a lot of money on it, but okay, all right. Don Clark is a biochemist with lots of experience in pharmaceuticals and pills and medicines and research and testing and stuff. But, Don, how much do you know about parasites? Because I have some questions for you. Like, did God make them? Mm. Are things like viruses, like COVID maybe, or bacteria, do they qualify as parasites? And how come they're harmful? Did God make them to plague us? What? How'd that work?
Oh, well, you forgot a category of poisonous snakes. Oh. Why didn't you throw those in as well?
Well, I don't think they're parasites, though. I mean, they don't need a
they're
host.
Not parasites.
Yeah.
No. Okay, so a parasite, you know, is
I remember watching a movie. It was like a kind of like a documentary, but it had to do with some people who were on a plane crash in the jungles of South America, and they got parasites, some sort of fly or flying insect lay eggs in them, and for medical treatment, these maggots would erupt from their skin, and they'd have to pop them out, and that was part of those are parasites. That was one of the grossest things I've seen in a long time. How come we got them?
Well, that's a good question. Of course, God created them, so you say, well, but they have such negative effects. They make us sick, they give us other types of diseases, they allow bacteria and other things to infect us. If God made a good and perfect world initially, how did these things come about? And were they created when God created the world? Or did he create them later after man fell? So those are interesting questions. Of course,
I don't see any biblical support for that last alternative. Did he go on creating new creatures after Genesis?
Well, no, that's what I was just getting to.
Okay.
Of course, if you know Genesis and you know that he created everything in 6 days, and after that, you know, God rested, or he stopped his creation because he said, you know, his creation was very good or perfect at that time, then he didn't create any new creatures, but man's downfall and man's activities has created a havoc with this perfect world that we once used to live in, especially before the flood. Now, remember, people lived quite a long time. Animals lived a very long time as well, and we still have evidence of animals that are quite large, in particular the dinosaurs. And how did they get so big? Well, they just kept growing. And man, before the flood, was living on an average of 900 years. And so was he plagued with parasites? Maybe a little, but obviously not enough to affect his health and not enough to cause him to die. From them, we have tapeworms, for example, that can grow up to 130 feet within a person, and now that's a problem.
Yeah.
So we would
want I can to see it now. The tapeworm versus Godzilla. New movie idea for me. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So imagine a tapeworm infecting a pre-flood human.
Wow.
Growing to thousands of feet long because it's been in there so long. No, I think what happened, and this is an enigma for the evolutionists, because they say, well, a parasite needs a host in order to live. But a lot of these parasites look like they didn't need a host at one point in time. So it's an enigma for them, whereas it's not an enigma for us. So here's what I think happened was that we had, of course, Adam and Eve fell, and so they were kicked out of the garden, and they were kicked out from the tree of life and all this other stuff. And then they were, allowed or had to really work hard for their food. They could, pick their food while they were in the garden from tree and just had to tend it a little bit. But after the fall, they, especially Adam, had to really work hard, for his food. But the food was still available. It just wasn't as readily available. And there was weeds and thorns and thistles that the Bible describes that, came up.
Well, the curse affected the whole of creation, right? I mean, it changed everything.
It changed things, but the environment around the Earth or around Pangaea, for example, was not bad. It's still okay. It was cursed, and yes, Adam had to work hard, and Eve had to work hard, and. But it still wasn't bad because they were living 900 years. So the environment was still pretty good, pretty good. Had to be very good for life, even at that point. And I think the parasites were kind of living on their own because, like I said, the environment was good. They didn't need extra protein or whatever, like man didn't need extra protein. He really didn't need to eat meat until after the flood.
Let's back up a step, though, because there are good parasites that is beneficial to man, and there are bad ones. I'm thinking of particularly bacteria in our gut that actually are helpful to us, that keep us healthy. So it's like some of them went bad, or with the curse, somehow our immune systems in human beings, I'm talking about now, became degraded. Now we go back to Dr. Don's theory of devolution, that it was the human beings that became susceptible, not that the parasites had changed. What do you think?
Well, I don't think all of these that we would call parasites today were actually parasites at the time.
Hmm.
But after... And yes, of course, our immune systems degraded, especially after the flood, because pre-flood, it appears that the atmosphere was that the atmospheric pressure was about twice what we have today, and that there probably was a higher concentration of oxygen because there was tremendous plant growth, and we didn't have a whole lot of carbon dioxide, but, the plants were using the carbon dioxide pretty quickly and converting it into oxygen. And so the oxygen partial pressure was probably greater than it is today. And so, things just were healthier in general than things today because of the environment that was pre-flood, conditions. Now, post-flood, things degraded very rapidly. And we see that from the lifespan of man himself as recorded in the Bible. And so his lifespan went from 900 plus years, 964, of course, for Methuselah, down very, very quickly for Noah's sons, and then Noah's sons, sons and the descendants, and it, you know, degraded from 900 years, you know, for Noah, 950, I believe. I'm not remembering that 100%, but down to 500, and then down, you know, to the hundreds. And, you know, Moses, of course, we know, lived 120 years. And then finally, we have your lifespan is 70, or if you're righteous, maybe it'll be 80. And, of course, we have people living to 100, you know, even now. But the point being that the average lifespan degraded rapidly. So we've gone from, with the one event, one global event called the flood, we've gone down from an average lifespan of about 900 years to now 70 or 80 years post-flood. So that means that the conditions post-flood, as we know, because we can see it, we live in it, are a lot less suitable for life. They're still suitable, but they're a lot less suitable for life. And therefore, we need more nutrition that used to be there in the plants and the things that we ate. And God then allows Noah to eat the animals, especially the clean animals, for nutrition, because the protein content now of vegetables and fruits and stuff wasn't going to be there. And so he needed to eat, you know, the animals for protein. Now, I think the same thing kind of happened to the parasites. They were probably sitting pretty happy pre-flood, and then post-flood, the conditions changed dramatically, and now they had to find a host in order to live better, because their environment outside was pretty hostile, and they weren't going to survive.
Well, it's true, is it not, that even, now you didn't answer the first question, which was, are virus and bacteria considered parasites? Virus in particular, they're both life forms, are they not?
Are they living things? There's a question about a virus. Bacteria certainly is, because it can reproduce itself, and that brings us to the question, what defines life? Viruses have the information in order to replicate, but it requires a cell, depends on what they attack, whether it's a plant or an animal, requires the mechanisms within some cell in order to reproduce.
That itself says to me that they're parasites, a form of parasite.
In the general, very, very general sense, in the classical term of parasites, we're talking about whole living organisms that, infect a host and then, you know, just multiply and within the host.
But do not bacteria and virus mutate in order to assure their own survival? That's what we're being told about COVID. That it forms mutations to, and it comes and goes in waves. That is, it'll slack off if it's killing too many hosts, and it will inflame itself again and cause waves of pandemic if the hosts are receptive. Is that nonsense? Is that imagination, or is that true?
Well, I think one is given too much intelligence to just a strand of RNA or DNA. Yes. Viruses, obviously, and bacteria, and, you know, do mutate. Now, because I just recently read this week, in the case of the new COVID strands, for example, that are coming out, the mutation is not that, you know, we're not talking about a major change. It's the mutations that have been identified are in the hypervariable regions of the spike protein. Most of the spike protein, amino acid sequence has been retained. It's just the hypervariable regions, which is the binding region to the cell, that has changed. So
it's kind of like a software upgrade.
And so which, but that's the most important, you know, region as far as infection is concerned, is the binding region of the spike protein. So that's what gets the virus into the cell in the first place. It's got to bind to the cell in order to get into it. And if you created antibodies to the virus, have you created a general enough antibodies that will protect you from, in quote, the second wave of this virus infection? And that's a big question. I don't think anybody, knows.
Do human beings have a mechanism to protect themselves against parasites? Or are we just open to attack?
Yes, we do. And you mentioned it initially, which is our immune system. Of course, any foreign body that gets into our bodies is going to be attacked by the immune system. Now, the question is, does the attacking organism have defenses against it itself being attacked? And several of these do, and so therefore they grow and survive in the host. In general, a person is much better off with a good immune system than not, and that seems to be the case with the COVID virus or any other flu. You're more susceptible to the flu if your immune system is suppressed via stress, for example, or old age. You're not taking the right nutrients that we need to be taking, not getting enough sun, for example. Those type of things all enhance the immune system, whereas being obese or having other types of problems suppress the immune system. So eating a lot of sugar suppresses the immune system. This is the type of things that we've known now for quite some time. Being overweight is not good for the immune system. Fasting is good for the immune system because it helps clear the body of toxins and things like that. So there are things that we can do to help, support our immune system, which then helps our general health and helps protect us from these types of things that are going to come along because we live in a fallen world. We've got a lot of things, both external stresses on our bodies, as well as these types of rogue bacteria and rogue viruses that come along that want to basically chew us up. is what they're kind of designed to do. Now you say, okay, why did God create such things? I think that's where we started this conversation. Mm-hmm. why did God create such things? And I proposed earlier that, maybe these things weren't quite as toxic, if you will, or detrimental before the flood. But now, after the flood, conditions have changed, and it puts more pressure on us. It puts more pressure on the organism doing the attack, and thereby making them more prone to causing problems, as opposed to before the flood, they probably didn't cause too much problems. Now, you look at bacteria and funguses and those type of things, the main purpose is to degrade dead vegetation or even dead animal, the tissue. Most of these things are designed to return nutrients back into the soil, thereby continuing the cycle of life. Now, the problem comes in, of course, is when these bacteria and viruses and things attack us in fungus. We probably all have fungal infections, but, attack us while we're still living. And as I said, if you don't have good hygiene or good immune system, they will start affecting our health in general and kind of bring us down. So is
you brought us back to point one. God designed everything with a plan and a purpose, but that has been perverted by man's rebellion.
Yes, and a snake we don't consider to be a parasite, but it certainly is dangerous to us, especially the poisonous ones. Right. Mm-hmm. Now, it just so happens that the neurotoxin that is in snake venom is not poisonous if you're at higher atmospheric pressures, like pre-flood.
Hmm.
So the snake venom, now the tongue, the forked tongue of a snake, is specifically designed as a thermal sensor. So it senses heat, and in particular, an animal heat, and then it strikes where the heat is. It's not going to strike where the cold is. It's going to strike where the heat is, which happens to be the body or whatever. Now, so the assumption or the hypothesis is that snakes were useful prior to the flood, because if you hurt yourself, if you cut yourself or damaged yourself, you would have more heat in that area because the immune system is trying to repair the damage, and you have more blood, you have more circulation in that area, and the snake would strike specifically at that spot, thereby neutralizing the pain. So it was like a taking, Novocaine, for example. If you have a break or something, and you want to numb the pain, a snake bite would pre-flood would have done the same thing. It wouldn't have done you in. The toxin only became a toxin post-flood when the conditions weren't right, anymore. That the neurotoxins, instead of just deadening the nerves, would bind so tightly that it would completely paralyze the individual, whether it be animal or
that's
man.
That's interesting,
and it's caused death.
Again, it speaks to the original idea that God made everything for the benefit of everything. It all worked together as a divine system, where each part of it served every other part of it.
Right. It was a divine system, and everything worked, as God said, perfectly together. And everything had its purpose, and everything, was there to help man live a long and fruitful life. It's just that when man fell, fell into sin and disobeyed God, then the equation changed. And as you mentioned earlier, of course, the whole creation was contaminated, by man's sitting, which is an interesting point in and of itself.
Hmm. It is. Well, we learned something today. I didn't think parasites could be so interesting. Sometimes they can be, as an original part of creation, and actually may have been to our benefit at one time. And then, of course, along came Eve. That sounds like a song title. Along came Eve.
It is a song title.
Is it a song? Okay.
It is a song title. Parasites of Eve.
I see. That's Paradise, Parasites. Well, we can work out the lyrics on that a little later on, I think.
We don't have it.
We're talking with Dr. Don Clark, biochemist and a member of the board of Creation Moments, by the way. CreationMoments.com is their website, and there you will find an impressive library, an archive of scientific information that supports the biblical story of creation. I recommend you visit them, creationmoments.com. And Don, recommend that you come back to us next Tuesday and talk some more. Will you do that?
Oh, we certainly will.
We'll look forward to that. Good luck. Have a good week. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.